Ghost Story Salon, everybody. This is my friend and collaborator, Jared Samuel, multi-instrumentalist, jewelry maker. Jared just made some jewelry 10 minutes ago. Jared, what's your ghost story?
My ghost story is, I have to go back and look now. I'm embarrassed to say I don't know how many years ago it was now that my grandfather passed away, but it was, I would say somewhere in the neighborhood of about 14 or 15 years. And it was also around that same time that that I started hanging out and working a lot with my friend Paul.
So you're about 20?
22.
Okay.
Yeah. But thanks for thinking I'm a little bit younger than I am. When you're this vain, every little bit counts.
22 is about 20. Jared played on our album Wildflower Blues, and the engineer turned to me and said, "Does this guy wear a lot of jewelry?"
What do you mean?
And he, Larry Crane had to edit out all of your jewelry.
I was going to put my sweatband on, which silences all the bangles.
No, it's kind of beautiful. That's
thanks.
All right.
So yeah, I was about 20, and I started working a lot with my friend Paul, who's a really gifted singer and songwriter, but unfortunately he's not available anywhere on streaming platforms. His name's Paul Dooley. I guess he's unofficially something of a medium. There are definitely spirits that come through him, I would say for sure, if there's someone who's an open channel for stuff like that besides present company.
I'm not a medium.
Well, not officially, but I mean, like someone who's like an open channel and can be in touch. Maybe medium is an exaggeration,
right?
And it's a term not to be bandied about.
There's something that people talk about in artistic circles, like we talk about so and so channeling something,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes I think that's an expression of poor self-esteem. You know, on the part of the observer, even I would go that far to say that. But it's also like, you know, a lack of willingness to ascribe greatness to the person who's so-called channeling, you know, because, you know, we can all think about, you know, so-called channelers who are just frauds. And who was that lady who was in the news recently who like... The businesswoman who had the fake voice.
Most business people have fake voices.
who's the businesswoman with the fake voice?
Oh yeah, it's
She was peddling a fake medical device.
We've made it possible to eliminate the tubes and tubes of blood that traditionally have to be drawn from an arm.
Elizabeth Holmes.
Oh yes, she's scary.
So she was channeling an effective business person.
Yeah.
And she like duped a lot of people in with her and or they were totally complicit in a massive scam.
I mean, side note, it struck me kind of funny, but not at all unexpected that most of her benefactors, would that would be the word behind this, all the people that helped her raise funds were all just some of the most reprehensible. So somehow steering it back to my friend Paul.
Do you think Paul is like a medium in a classical sense or more like he maybe doesn't own some of his greatness?
No, I think he absolutely owns his greatness. I meant medium in the sense of like in the sense of being you know, it's like when you write a song that fast where it almost feels like it's written by someone else. You know, it's yourself. Or I guess in the same way that, like, I read an interview with Marvin Gaye where he talked about, like, if he could co-credit God with writing What's Going On without people thinking that he was utterly off his fucking tits, then he would have done that. And I think it's more an expression of humility than being like, yeah, God helped me write this record. It wasn't like Kanye bragging. It was like, it was like Marvin Gaye just being like, I felt divinely moved by this because it previously wasn't known to him that it was within his power to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Paul is in touch with spirits in a similar way where it's just like, but that could just be because he's honed his craft so much and he's spent all the so-called Malcolm Gladwell genius hours, you know, thousands and thousands of hours in front of a four-track recorder and playing instruments and singing.
Just making yourself open to that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Samantha Parton says that an angel whispered the chorus to Littlest Birds into her ear.
Yeah.
So similar thing. It's like the ancient Greek conception of what genius is.
Mm, yeah. Yeah, and back then it wasn't necessarily, they wouldn't call someone genius, right? It would be more like, it was like a visit with genius. It was never like, genius was never an adjective ascribed to a human being at that time. I might be talking slightly out of my ass, but I know it had something to do with like, yeah, we should research this and come back to it. But I know for a fact that they would never call a human being a genius. It was that person had a visit with genius. But there's another phrase for it that's eluding me right now.
I've always assumed that it was somehow associated with genie.
Hmm. Yeah.
Like a visiting spirit.
Hmm. That would make sense. Yeah. We should do another podcast entirely about our obsession with words and their roots.
I'm always a bit leery of disascribing creation to individuals because it's part of a sexist and racist trope, you know, which is to say that it smells like sexism and racism.
Yeah.
I have a friend who's a great writer, and she'll, you know, get up to read some of her fiction, and later on people will come up to her and say, thank you for sharing your story. And she will remind them that it's fiction, and everyone's feelings seem to be hurt when she does that. Like, it's so hard for the general public. It's so hard for our culture to imagine that women are creators. We have a fraught relationship with artistry in general in our culture. Like paying them, just ascribing someone's work to themselves.
Yeah.
I think about like blues writers sort of like,
I was just going to go to the Alan Lomax camp.
I do love the Lomaxes.
Yeah. I mean, and Moses Ash too, like there are a lot of things that they did where it was just like, there's a lot of reasons that there's a really intense duality there, at least in how I feel about them too, where it's just like, they did so many things for some of these musicians and performers and writers, most importantly writers. There's wonderful things they did for them and horrible things that they did to them. And it's almost like you can't really, it feels like maybe that is the what this city was built on and not rock and roll. It's like when people say that the music industry has gone to seed or whatever, it's like, no, this is the model that it always was. It has always been about people's work being somewhat exploited. And if someone gets paid, they should feel grateful that people are hearing their music. And it's great that their work's getting out there. But like, yeah. And it does originate absolutely, I think, in sexism and racism and the idea that, you know, especially like the Afrocentric tradition was something that was never written down and it was never recorded and it was all basically like oral tradition. And then at some point someone came along and said, well, I'm going to write this down and I'm going to record it. And that person was white and male.
Yeah. So your friend.
My friend.
Is like a medium.
Sort of. The fact that Paul was the person who picked up on what I kind of took to be some way of my grandfather communicating, I wasn't at all surprised that it was Paul who was the person that was kind of like the intermediary there. And the way that it happened was that I'd wanted my grandfather and Paul to meet for a while before my grandfather passed. My grandfather passed quite suddenly. He was about 84 and really healthy to the point where, you know, he and my grandmother would go on walks together like all the time. Long walks, and people would often mistake him for being a person at least 20 years younger than he was. And then he fell and broke his hip, and it was over really fast. Thankfully, he didn't spend a lot of his time in the hospital because he hated it there. And everyone in the family's kind of convinced to a certain extent that, like, his stay in the hospital definitely hastened his exit from here because he just didn't want to fucking live that way. But, you know, before he had a fall, it was just more a matter of like, oh, I just have to set up schedules so that Paul and my grandfather can have a sit down because they'd have so much to talk about. They're both kind of like huge buffs of philosophy and American history and lovers of all kinds of music. And I just wanted to be a fly on the wall for them to meet. I thought it would just be a really interesting conversation and possibly a new friendship for both of them. And it never got to happen. And then about a week after my grandfather passed, Paul and I were doing a house painting job, which is where I spent a lot of time with Paul in those years. He would employ me as a house painter with him, even though I couldn't really paint worth a damn.
It's really hard.
Yeah. I think I eventually learned sort of how to do stuff like that, but it wasn't until like a week before our last painting job was done and then I went back out on tour. Mm-hmm. But now when I have to do touch-ups around like my own apartment or if I'm helping a friend paint their apartment, I know I have these skills that like little by little Paul just totally drilled into me by just being like, no, fuck man, you're what's wrong with you?
That's a good kind of a gig for a musician, yeah, though. Yeah. Just like to have this physical labor that's really different from the very mental labor of being an artist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was great to get lost in that. And then also to listen to music all day and just listen to it without any kind of, like, I didn't have to think about DJing it. I didn't have to think about learning it in a conscious way. It was just sort of like, I think there was one week where we painted this guy's interior, this guy Scott, and this was like kind of before, it was right around the time of like the iPod Classic, but it was long before streaming being readily available. So this guy Scott had like, you know, kind of like a consumer level, nice, really, really nice system at home. It was like the best that Sony could offer, you know. Mm-hmm. And it was like, he had like a 100 disc carousel changer in his basement. But we had to deal with Scott's CD collection, which was mostly like your basic classic rock shit. A lot of Billy Joel, a lot of Elton John.
Yeah.
But what he did have was John Wesley Harding by Dylan.
John Wesley Harding was a friend to the poor. He traveled.
And we listened to that record probably at least once or twice a day, every single day for 2 months. Never got old.
Amazing.
So now that still holds its place. It's a special place in my heart. It's hard to pick a favorite Dylan record, but that one's up there. But anyhow, it was one of those days at Scott's place, and it was about a week after my grandfather had passed, the album, whatever album we were listening to, whether it was John Wesley Harding or something, I don't remember, but the album stopped. And I was a couple of rooms away, but it was like a big empty house, mostly with just the most raw construction up, you know, a lot of drywall, a lot of exposed beams. So sound really reverberated in there. And Paul, like you, Jolie, is an amazing whistler. Really wide range, and he could project. And he could imitate bird calls very convincingly. But on this particular day, Paul whistled T for Two. Which Paul listens to a lot of stuff, but I've never ever before or since heard him hum, sing, whistle, or do anything involving kind of classic show tunes. And I was like, I was kind of startled, and I found him in the next room. I was like, what made you whistle that? And he's like, oh, I don't know. It just kind of, when the music ended, it just kind of randomly popped into my head. Mm-hmm. So, and what I told him and what I'll tell you now.
I remember that was one of your grandfather's favorite songs.
Yeah. And I'm not even sure if it was even like, he had so many favorite songs, but it was like this omnipresent song in my grandparents' house. I don't think I ever heard him play a recording of it. I just heard him shuffling around the house, and he would kind of do this thing like he'd be in his slippers and bathrobe early in the morning when we'd stay over there as kids. And he would kind of do like this, he'd half singing, half kind of like grunting, like, and he'd kind of shuffle around in his slippers, and it was really fucking adorable. But that was like his theme. And Paul whistled it. So
that's so sweet.
Yeah, in some way it kind of told me that, you know, I guess in some way or another, you know, not to put too fine a point on it or a bow or anything, but it was like that was their meeting that I really wanted to happen. So it was nice for me to hear too.
That's really beautiful.
Thanks for letting me talk about it.
I got tears in my eyes.
Yeah.
That's super sweet. That especially the sense of the song visiting him,
mm-hmm.
you know, him as like an open radio signal for such things.
Yeah. Yeah, antenna is kind of the right word for it. Yeah.
Stevie, have you been listening?
Yes.
Do you want to come tell your story about singing Adrienne's theme song? So I think about the Ghost Story Salon as being these stories in reaction to each other, you know, and I've collected so many ghost stories that, you know, people will tell me this one very, very odd experience that they've had, and I will know three stories like it, you know, that are also super, super weird, that, you know, those people had never met anyone that, you know, had heard anything like it. So, you know, the Ghost Story Salon is about, you know, sharing these very human experiences that we don't often get a chance to talk about. I just want to say about your story, Jared, one thing that it brings up, and it's an interesting commonality with Stevie's story, is that, you know, if we're going to get into the metaphysical mechanics of how that this, you know, how we might explain to ourselves how this happened, was your grandfather meeting Paul, communicating through Paul, or was Paul reading the song through you in some way?
I mean, so I would counter that no matter what, it's whether it's Paul reading it in me or reading it like in my grandfather, in some form or another being there, either way, it's like, it's the spirit of my grandfather. Mm.
Yes. And it's just a really beautiful experience and totally gives me chills.
And it's a nice way for us to meet your grandfather too, through the story.
Well, if we're all in Portland together, you guys have to meet my uncle, my mom's brother, because he's, like, the older he gets, the more like my grandfather he becomes in really charming, kind of like corny ways. Like, just all the puns.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's where you get it from.
Yeah, well, no, it goes on both sides of my family, got it. Honestly.
I was thinking about...
It doesn't just run it.
My grandfather, like... My grandfather would putter around the kitchen and be like, la, 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 like singing old songs from the 40s.
Like Jerry Lewis.
Yeah, very nasal. It's very kind of nasal tone. So my story is not a ghost story, exactly.
It's not a ghost story. And it's kind of this bridge in between the conception of your story as a ghost story versus it being like a psychic image.
This happened actually at a gig that we all played together at Manhattan Inn, the Lou Reed tribute night. It was the first time that I met Adrienne Linker.
Yeah.
Lou Reed, RIP, Manhattan Inn, RIP.
Yes. Everyone else.
And actually that gig was the night that David Bowie passed.
That's also true.
What?
Yeah.
Bowie, RIP.
Don't you remember waking up in the morning to the news that Bowie had just died?
I blocked it out.
I totally remember, because we had just been singing Satellite of Love.
That's right.
And like, he was very present in that, in Lou's work. Mm-hmm. I mean, they worked together. So the first time I met Adrienne...
Was that night.
Was that night. And she told me her name. We were meeting. Like, it was the moment that we met. And she was like, Adrienne... And I was like, oh, that's like a song, like, Adrienne. And she was like, that's the song that my dad wrote for me and used to sing to me when I was a kid. And I was
like, this song, okay.
I just sang this melody.
Yeah.
I just sang this melody when she told me her name.
Yeah.
was like, oh, that's like a song, like Adrienne. Yeah. And she was like, yeah, that's the song that my dad wrote for me when I was a kid.
And he used to sing it to her regularly.
And it was that particular melody.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember if that was the exact notes?
That, I mean, that's exactly what I sang.
Oh.
Went, if it just went up by like, it went up by.
Yeah, it was just like, a do re mi.
Yeah.
It was just, yeah.
Yeah.
No, but I sang that. Mm-hmm. I didn't sing Adrienne.
Yeah, yeah. No,
I sang
absolutely.
Adrienne.
Yeah, yeah.
And she was like, yeah, that's the song that my dad used to sing to me and wrote for me.
But no, that makes me, oh, go ahead.
No, nothing. I mean, that's the story. That's it.
My grandfather, the last song that I remember him singing was Red River Valley.
From this valley, they say you are going.
I'll start crying if I sing it.
Can I sing it?
Yeah.
From this valley, they say you are going. Do not hasten to bid us adieu. That one, right? But remember that Red River Valley. What happens next? I don't remember. And then, you know it.
I just know it because I can hear where the melody is going.
You know where it's going, yeah.
Yeah.
I know, like, the Woody Guthrie versions where he takes the melody and sings other stuff, right?
Yeah, Stevie just made me cry. Yeah. So,
that's sweet. That's the last song you remember your grandfather singing.
Yeah, he played on the harmonica. He was a great like Western harmonica style player. Like, you know, really individuated notes. Yeah, he always had Hohner marching band harmonicas.
Oh, are those the best?
Yeah, they're pretty good. Band, yeah, that's right. Marine band.
I remember that.
He was in the Navy.
I'm working on my harmonica chops.
Oh, yeah. We had this incredible gift. I was friends with the last heir to Ruby Dandridge, who was Dorothy Dandridge's mother, and she just gave me Ruby's bass harmonica. It sounds incredible.
And
I can't play it. I'm sure you could really play it because you have, Jared has such an amazing sense of musical structure. So I'd love to hear you. Nice. I'd love to hear you get on it.
You know who can play the shit out of the bass harmonica is Stuart Bogie.
Oh, yeah. Seriously.
Yeah.
Yeah. Our friend Dylan Meek, who's Buck Meek's little brother, could play the hell out of it too, I'm sure. Dylan Meek practiced on the piano for 14 hours a day when he was a kid, and
never ever did that.
Yeah,
he's nuts.
He's all monster. He's 100% monster. It's terrifying. He's beyond. And I want to hear him play that bass harmonica.
Red River.
Oh,
Valley.
Yeah. And my grandfather taught the cockatiel how to sing Take Me Back to Tulsa.
Where's that gal, the red dress on some folks called her Dinah? Stole my heart away from me way down Louisiana. Take me back to Tulsa, I'm too young to marry.
That's amazing.
So this is the regional differences of our grandfathers. I have a story that's a bit similar to yours. There's a grandmother, a great-grandmother that I never met, and I'd always heard that she was a really beautiful seamstress. My grandfather was killed, and she had to raise her kids on her own, and she would work as a seamstress, and you could just describe a dress that you wanted made, and she would make it for you. Like, she was one of those old-fashioned, you know, just highly skilled seamstresses. And my cousin had one of the quilts that she made, and gave it to me. It's so beautiful. It's called a tree of, it's called, the pattern is called Tree of Paradise. And so I saw her handiwork for the first time in my life. And I'm really grateful that it's this well preserved. I mean, it looks wonderful. And just I guess I was just thinking that I would have loved to have known her. And a few days later, I was like doing laundry. I was just like folding laundry, and I just had this like really sweet feeling of like maternal affection come over me. And like, I don't really have parents, so it's not like a feeling that I'm that used to. So it was really striking. And then of course, like a part of me is like 100% skeptical, and it was like, yeah, you just happen to feel good for some reason or whatever. But that was my sense of it.
Well, just like the presence of the object is like, could evoke that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for
like
sure.
Having this thing that like connects you to your ancestors is like a beautiful could evoke that feeling. Do you know what I mean? Like this sense of connection. I don't know. Not to like say, no, it wasn't your great grandmother visiting you through the quilt.
Yeah, well, that's what I was saying.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's so easy for me to be completely skeptical of my own experiences.
Yeah.
But I remember telling you, Stevie, and you were like, you're like, why do you gotta be so intellectual and skeptical all the time? I mean, just accept it, you know, or something like that.
Yeah, because it's so nice. What a beautiful experience.
There's definitely many ancestors of mine who I hope just stay the hell away.
I don't want you. To hear your favorite song. Stay out of here.
Oh, it's really funny. All right. Well, thank you so much for being part of the Ghost Story Salon.
Thanks, Joy. Thanks, Stevie.
Oh, thanks for having me in on it.
Jared Samuel and Stevie Weinstein owner.